All right, welcome to Linux Journal Insider 198. This is the command line issue for October 2010,
rather.
Hey, Kyle, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I tell you, I'm excited to talk about the command line issue.
I know. Last year, I called it the Kyle issue, and while I didn't say that again this year, it reminds me of you. Every article, I think, oh, Kyle would like that. Kyle would like that. So
that's what I was thinking when I read the articles. I was like, hey, I like that. Hey, I also like that.
Awesome. So a quick update on, last month when we were doing the podcast, my house was about to be placed on the foundation, if I recall correctly. And as of tonight, this very evening, my family is staying in the new house for the first time. Now, we don't have, I know, hurrah, we don't have hot water yet. We don't have power in the living room. For some reason, the wires are wrong.
But you have internet.
I do, actually. I have really nice internet service there. I'm actually in our rental house right now, all alone in a half-empty house, only because I couldn't set up my computer in time. But it's exciting. This week we'll be moving in for goodsies. So anyway.
Congratulations.
So what's up with you? You know, I would toast the occasion with you if we had anything to toast. That was my segue for your.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. Sorry. I was thinking actual toaster. So, okay. Yeah, well, you know, if only I could send some beer from my Linux-powered beer fridge. But so I have a little bit of an update to the beer fridge. I got a lot of feedback. Actually, the mailbag in this issue has some feedback from some other people that have read that article and had set up some stuff like that for themselves. It's kind of interesting how many other brewers there are that had the same problem that they solved a couple different ways. But even myself, this past week, to update, I liked the fact that I was using a laptop, but I thought, well, you know, laptops still draw quite a bit of power. And I had one of these Pogo plugs lying around, the pink one.
Nice.
Yes, it's pretty sweet. So I thought, well, what would be better than to have this pink Pogo plug powering my fridge, which is a nice tongue twister, too. So basically, long story short, I was able to – it's funny. I grabbed my article. I installed the custom Pogo Linux distribution they have for it, which is very simple. And then I more or less, after I got a basic CPAN environment and GCC running on it, which wasn't too difficult, I just followed my own directions in the article so I could remember what to do. And then, you know, it just worked basically. So now I have the Pogo plug replacing my laptop.
Wow. So like when you show off your home brewery stuff, you don't necessarily point people to the pink Pogo plug, do you?
No, not anymore. I mean, I used to lift up the lap. The one downside is I don't have the cool LCD screen showing my temperatures. You know, before I would flip up the laptop screen and it would be tailing my log, you know, so I could say, hey, look, it's, you know, 43 degrees in there or whatever.
I see. So
I don't have that, but I can just open my phone and SSH in if I want to, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, anyway, this issue is awesome. It's the command line issue. Again, this is one of our favorite issues of the year, only because we're geeks and pretty much typing on the command line is what we do most of the day. My first article is by Jess Frazier. It's Command Line Application Roundup. And it's a really great overview of a whole bunch of different command line tools. Some of them you may not be familiar with, even you, Kyle. I know it's hard to believe. But there are, you know, the ones you would expect, like IRC for IRC and RTorrent for BitTorrent files. But there were some really cool things. Like, I never really considered, oh, where is it? I want to make sure I get the right tool here. But, like, listening to music on the command line, no, maybe you do that, but I generally don't do that. But things like a calendaring program or, you know, personal information manager, things like that are really things I don't think about but can be done on the command line. Again, this is probably just old news for you, Kyle, because you do pretty much everything on the command line. But for me, it was great to see some different tools that are available and are highly functional. It's just a great list. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there.
It's a really good article to set off the issue too, because it really does give a good roundup for all the major types of functions you'd want to perform. It gives some really good solid command line alternatives. You know, I mean, and the other thing is it may not be simply that you have a lower, I mean, this could just be because you have a lower powered PC and you don't need the graphical interface for most of this stuff. But it also could just be, hey, you know, why use extra resources when you don't need to? I mean, I like having terminals open with screen sessions with a lot of, you know, little command line programs running in it. So.
And yeah, you're right. Speed. I mean, even if you have a souped up computer, it's tough to beat the speed of a command line tool. They're just, you know, lightning fast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, especially like if you have a, you know, a mail folder with, you know, 15,000 messages in it, it's hard to have anything open it faster than Mutt will. So.
Yes, but you are a bit you're a bit biased when it comes to Mutt, I think.
Probably, yeah. I think that's fair.
All right, so what's your first article?
Okay, so the article I'm going to talk about is Derby, Directory Bookmarks for Bash, and that's written by Ira Chayut. And basically, this is a program that Ira has written. And basically, what it does is, if you've ever used the command line, and you've probably heard eventually, as people will talk about pushd and popd, which are ways that you can have the stack set up. So when you're changed to a particular directory, if you think, hey, I may want to go to this directory later, if you remember, you can push that directory to the stack, and then push other directories to the stack, and then later on you can pop those directories off and it'll CD back to that directory. Well, you know, that's existed for a long time, but the thing that's always bugged me about it is I never know that I'm going to want to go back to that directory in time. So I never remember to push to the stack. So when I'm in another directory, I never remember to, there's no point in popping because I never pushed. Anyway, so what this program does is it sort of extends pushd and popd, and using, what's cool is he wrote it pretty much completely in Bash, and it extends that so that you have the idea of bookmarks. So the notion is more or less that, you know, if you find yourself frequently going to varlog, going to etsy, of course that's pretty short, but going to things like varlog or varlog apache, or you're going to your desktop or things like that, you can create these bookmarks with just one character commands. You can save a bookmark and then go to it. For example, you could save a bookmark like your desktop as D, and then you can say type G for go and then a space and then D, which is the name of the bookmark. And then that's just, you know, a couple keystrokes and you change to that directory. So he goes over, first, you know, how to navigate this software, how to use it, you know, basic commands, and then talks a little bit about the underpinnings and how it works under the hood. So, you know, if you're the kind of person that's been using pushd and popd, but every now and then you get stuck because you forgot to pop on the stack, this is something to look into because it makes it a little bit easier to remember. You don't have to necessarily remember. You can just have a list of favorites.
That's cool. And, you know, one of the things that I normally do is, if there's a lot of directories that I go to often, I mean, honestly, I can type cd /var/log quicker than I can think it. But for a lot of really complicated directories, I'll often make like symlinks on my home directory. The downside of that is it gets kind of cluttered in your home directory, and you still have to type CD and, you know, go to that directory. But this is kind of neat because I've never once have I used pushd or popd ever. But this is something I might actually get used to using, so that's kind of cool. This next article that I'm going to be talking about, it's the Venerable Spreadsheet Calculator, SC, and it's by Sergey Halyan. And this is a really neat spreadsheet because here's the deal, it happens all in a terminal window. Now, I don't know how often you use a spreadsheet, Kyle, but I use a spreadsheet pretty often for, you know, like lists of teachers and students, or, you know, purchase orders, all those kinds of things that you really want a spreadsheet to keep track of data. But every single time, it's always a GUI tool. It could be Google Docs, it could be OpenOffice, or, you know, at work, it could be, I don't know what the OS 10 numbers, I think, is a spreadsheet there, but it's always GUI. I never once considered a command line spreadsheet, but sure enough, this is it. So if you SSH into your server, you can actually have a spreadsheet going, and it's a really powerful spreadsheet with formulas and all that kind of stuff. It's a really interesting program. I'm actually going to play with it. I had never heard of it before, but after reading this article or this issue, I'm going to check it out and see if it's something I can get used to using, because I would love to be the guy whose spreadsheet is, you know, in a command line window.
I was very excited when I saw this article. I hadn't heard of SC before. So this was a new one for me. Just the fact that not only is it just that it runs in a terminal, but there's VI key bindings for everything. I mean, he thought of everything. You can, if you know VI, then you can use similar syntax to move around cells and to, you know, to move up and down cells and everything like that. I mean, what I want to do is I want to mess around with this and then set up a some sort of mode for Mutt so that if someone sends me a spreadsheet attachment, I can automatically open it with SC, so I don't have to do the whole dance of, you know, hitting enter, then having it open, fire up open office calculator or something when I really just want to have it in a terminal. So, yeah, I think I'm going to be, I can see myself using this quite a bit.
That's pretty awesome. And, yeah, I'm even going to try it. And I don't use the command line as much as you do, Kyle, but I have to admit, again, like we talked about earlier, even just for speed, how long does it take to launch OpenOffice? Well, a long time, even on a nice computer.
Well, I mean, it's just useful to have an extra tool like this, an extra spreadsheet program just as a backup, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, speaking of backups, so the article that I'm going to talk about next is about using RDiff Backup and RDiff Web to backup and restore. This was written by Adrian Claver. And basically, the bulk of the article is really about RDiff Backup, and then mentions near the end about RDiff Web, which is a web front end. But basically, RDiff Backup is a program that's written in Python, and it uses librsync, which is the syncing algorithm that rsync uses that allows you to, you know, most people, hopefully these days that have used the command line have probably at least heard of rsync, that lets you synchronize files between different systems or even on the same system between different directories. And the nice thing about it is if you have files that have just changed a little bit, like large files that just have small changes, this algorithm can detect the small changes and just send the difference instead of sending the whole file over again. Well, that's really handy if you're doing a backup over the network especially. So RDiff Backup takes advantage of this. So it's a lot like using rsync, except the nice thing is it makes it a lot easier to do incremental backups. So you know, with rsync, you would have to come up with all these schemes. And this basically makes it really simple to get the same sort of power but have, you know, daily incremental backups, and you can restore from different states and time. And so he basically goes over like all the stuff you'd want to know, how to exclude directories and a lot of good examples so that you can set up a whole backup suite on the command line without any GUI. But then again, if you want a GUI, he even talks about how to use the web front end.
That's awesome. Now, I know you and I both use it's an rsync tool. It's Backup PC. And, you know, the same type of thing, backing up over the network, it's all command line. Now, Backup PC has a web front end as well. But this whole concept of, you know, backing up changes, it's not a new concept, but it's amazingly efficient. And I don't know if you use tape backups at all, but I haven't used tape backups in like a decade, I think.
They're such a pain. I mean, I've considered using them maybe for archiving, but even then, it's just such a pain to deal with. And these days, it's almost cheaper to get a bunch of disks, you know, get two copies of the disks in case one fails. You know, it's almost cheaper to do it that way to me.
Yeah, I've considered putting hard drives in safes, you know.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but vendors seem to always want to sell you backup tools. You know, if you're buying anything else from a vendor, it seems like there must be a great profit off of backup software, because everyone has backup software they're selling. But it's funny, like these open source backup tools do the same exact stuff using the same or better algorithms, and usually simpler to set up, and, you know.
And it's not proprietary. You know, I mean, you can the stuff is accessible by any operating system, or, you know, it's just, yeah, I would never go to a commercial. I don't see any reason, and it's not just a principle thing, but seriously, even feature-wise, I wouldn't go to one of those commercial backup tools. I'm just so happy with the open source options out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so this is definitely a tool to look at if you're going to if you want to do some sort of command line backups under Linux.
Yeah. Now, one more thing I want to talk about, Kyle. Instead of reaching into the mailbag this month, there's a lot of replies in the issue where a lot of people have replied to the different things. Like, I think you replied to some stuff about your beer cooler, but I wanted to talk about one of the reviews this year. Now, you've actually seen a Nano Note, haven't you? This is a tiny, tiny little Linux computer. You've actually seen one in the flesh or in the silicone, right?
Right, right. Yeah,
silicon.
Yeah, I didn't see it, and that's it. Yeah. Although I did go to DEFCON. Anyway, a friend of mine bought one maybe a month or two back. And brought it to, you know, a group meeting, and he's kind of showing it off. So I've gotten a chance to sort of type around on it a little bit and poke around, see what it had going for it.
And my opinion, based on the on the review is it's a neat idea. It's very inexpensive. I think that's it, more than anything, it has that going for it. Well, other than it runs Linux, that's always a plus. But I think the price, it's like right around $100, I think. And my biggest concern is the lack of real networks. There's no Wi-Fi. There's no Ethernet. It's some weird USB way to get online. And I think that's a real crime because I think it'd be such a more useful and fun tool.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing that when I was poking around on it, it's just, again, the price is right. It's just that it's still pretty slow. If you would have showed this device to me a couple years ago, before there was all kinds of cell phones that had keyboards and ran Linux, then it would be a lot more exciting. But these days, it seems like you could get even the original G1 Google phone, and I think it would actually stack up as far as power goes, and you would have network connectivity.
That's true. That's true. So it's a neat little device, and it's got a screen and clamshell and could probably fit in your pocket. So it's a neat device, and like we said, the price point is really good. But I don't know. For me, I guess I either want a little more or, like you said, a smartphone because there's just so many options out there.
I mean, it's neat that the hardware's open, and that's a nice part about it. And I could see this being kind of working out maybe for some people who want to do sort of like an Arduino-like hardware hacking thing, but they're not quite comfortable with the hardware hacking side of it. There may be a programmer who wants to do a little bit of that. You could get a little device like this and using USB maybe connected to stuff. I'm not sure. So maybe it'd be interesting for projects like that. I'm not sure. But, yeah, it just – When I looked at it, it was kind of cool. It was neat, but just these days, there's a lot of it's going to be tough because there's a lot of competitors that are faster and about as cheap.
Although, in its defense, how much is the Pogo plug that you hooked up to your fridge? I think they're like $100, aren't they?
I actually got it as a present. So,
not to ruin the present, but I think they're around $100. So you could probably use this Nano Note to keep your beer cooler cool.
You're probably right. Yeah, I think it has at least one USB port on it. Yeah. I could just sort of set that up USB host mode and up to a hub. Absolutely. Yeah. So I could actually have this powering my beer fridge. Maybe it even draws less power.
Maybe. No, it's not pink like the Pogo plug.
That's true. So that's a strike against it. But.
All right. Well, this is a fun issue. Every single article, I just some issues are my favorite. I love the cool projects issue. I'm looking forward to next month as well, the Hack This issue. That's going to be a lot of fun. But it's a great issue. I hope you enjoy it as much as we do. And if you're nerdy and geeky and sysadmin-y like Kyle and I think you will. But I want to thank you for listening to the Linux Journal Insider for the October 2010 issue. Make sure to pick up a copy on newsstands in mid-September. And subscribers, if you're listening to this, you probably already have a copy in your hands, or it's on its way. We hope you enjoy. Next month's focus, like I just said, is Hack This. So make sure to tune in again, and don't forget to visit us online at www.linuxjournal.com. Hey, Kyle, I will talk to you, well, before next month, but enjoy this issue, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, later.